Thank you, our inadequate words. To Doug, to you. Never are they adequate to thank God for the privileges and blessings. My name's Tom Lovern, and I am an alcoholic. I didn't have to say that. I said it because I wanted you to say hi. I want to take just a couple of minutes to do a thing personally. And I'm sure you'll indulge me this. I've been two places since spring where I could express appreciation personally to a lot of people. I was over in Salisbury, Maryland. I had the privilege of chairing one of the meetings at the Virginia State Conference, and now here. As many or most of you know, I was pretty sick back in June and spent a good part of that month in the hospital. And I wanted to express my appreciation personally to all of you for calls and cards and prayers and expressions to Gay and me both. I know how much you helped me. I strongly suspect that when this happens to one of us, and I have participated where others have needed a word, I strongly suspect we affect people that we never know about. I can tell you one we're affected. A telephone operator asked my daughter-in-law who I was. Said either I was awfully sick and about to die, or I was awfully important. And I just am so grateful to be here this morning, and your continued prayers make me, I feel better than I felt in years. And I'm just grateful to you. I do want to tell you that I'm kind of proud of what made me sick. Alcoholics, no respectable alcoholic gets any common ordinary disease. I mean, they're for earth people, you know, the ordinary things. Somebody asked me what was the matter with me, why I quit smoking, that sort of thing. Well, I want to tell you what I have. I learned this. I have an illness called hypolipoproteinemia type 4, which is hyperglyceridemia coupled with pulmonary emphysema. And I asked my Japanese doctor what that meant. He said it means you got fat blood and you smoke too damn long. Now, Isaac, I wore the funeral, wedding, wake, and christening suit for both of us. It's an interesting experience to stand here. And that's not an adequate description of the experience. It's, for the most part, it is a time of great blessing. And I have on many occasions said to you, and I said it sincerely, I don't know why I continue to be here. You will note in your program that this is the 38th time that we've been to Blackstone, and this makes 36 times that I've stood on this platform. I've repeated my story 36 times, I don't think. And yet I told the only story that I have to tell. The only way I know to change it or upgrade it or make it more interesting is to go get drunk, and if you're waiting for that, the good Lord willing, you ain't never going to hear it. And it used to worry me that I had to finish up. And then it occurred to me just recently. You know, that's an enviable spot to be in. Because after this many years, Tom, they don't expect much from you anyhow. So it's... And it's a kind of time of capsuling what I guess all of us felt. And some of you could do this better than me. I It begins so early for us here, and the weekend goes so fast. We who kind of have the privilege of putting this together, as most of you know, that we have a board of trustees that handles this. It began a long time ago, 19 years ago, with my sponsor, Jack White. I don't break his anonymity. He's passed on from this place. We went up to Cook's Forest, and we came home wanting a place to do something of the same nature. Julian was there. Cliff went up. We began to scramble around looking for a place, and we went a year and a half, and we couldn't find any place to have it. One day I was in Jack's office, and he said, I just don't understand why we can't find a place. Now, this fellow was, he lived AA 24 hours a day. He even slept. If he snored, it was AA. And the traditions and the steps were sacred to him. But he was so determined that AA in Virginia was going to have a place to meet apart in a kind of retreat that he even considered violating everything he held holy. He thought of buying a place on Skyline Drive and building a pavilion and giving it to AA. And one day in his office, he said, I just don't understand why we don't find a place. And you a preacher, how come you don't pray about this? And I said to him, well, I want it as bad as you do, but how come you don't pray too? He said, it's a good idea if we both start. Within a week, so help me, the bishop of our church called me, and I was appointed trustee of Blackstone College. We'd gotten it back from the Army, and we had met and decided we weren't going to open it as a college. It was going to be a retreat center. And we held the first big retreat in this place when it came back from the Army. Prayer works. I think Jack prayed. I know I did. And Jack attended too. Now, he was a great fellow. He'd organize everything, and the people in his office would send out the mailing, get in the returns, and set everything up. And we'd meet down here at the Blackstone Restaurant, he and Gay and I. He'd hand us the box and say, I'll see you Sunday, and he'd disappear in this building. And we'd make beds. Mr. and Miss Daniel one weekend here went to the National Guard Armor and borrowed blankets so we wouldn't freeze to death. We came here when the heating system didn't work, and some of you complained this weekend. One fellow told me he didn't have any hot water. I can tell you when we didn't have water. Mr. and Miss Daniels worked and did everything possible to make this a good place, and Jack died, and we saw that this could not be a one-man operation, and it had no business being, and we asked trustees, and there are some 16 or 18 now and their wives who come and take over and have the responsibility of this, and I just wish they'd stand. I some of you are new, and you don't know, but all the trustees and their wives stand where you are, please. Now, these are the people that make this thing possible for us. And it begins on Thursday evening. We come together, and on last Thursday evening up in the coffee lounge, a number of people, we spend a little time sharing with each other what Blackstone means to us. All of us have heard it from one another time and time again. But it serves a great purpose. It sort of clears our heart and soul that we can find the proper mood and try to fulfill our responsibility as trusted servants to you in this fellowship for the weekend. It sets the mood for us. One, Charlie Ward, the newest of the trustees, spoke of the community of the fellowship. And it rung a bell. Isaac Millies truly didn't know they were going to be chairing meetings until they got here. We just don't tell people. Few of you ever know who's going to speak. We don't think it's necessary to advertise. And I just loved seeing Isaac on this platform and Millie on Saturday morning. You see, I love these people. I've learned so much from both of them. Isaac don't always tell you all that's going on. I have learned more theology from this little Jewish man than I learned in the seminaries when I went back and entered the ministry. I have heard more truths. He won't tell me, but Millie's my pipeline. She does. I'll share a couple with you right quick, and you ponder these truths. Isaac was awful sick. And being in the fellowship and they knowing so many people and so many people loving them as I did, preachers of every faith and denomination dropped in to see Isaac. One day one of them, and I know he was sincere, it sounds a little sanctimonious when they say it to him, and it bothers me a little, but one said to Isaac, "Brother, have you made your peace with the Lord?" Isaac said, "I didn't know he's mad at me." Professor of homiletics that, bless his heart, he's not alive today, but I'd give anything in the world if I could be that when I can tell him this. I remember once up here when dear Dutch Whitley was here, and on Saturday night he grabbing people to help him fix communion. Suddenly he reached out and grabbed Isaac. Isaac, he said, "Would you help me fix communion?" Isaac said, "Sure." Millie began to howl. She said, "Only Jew in the place, and I ask you to fix Holy Communion." Isaac thought a minute. He said, "Who fixed the first one?" I loved having my A son. Chad had a meeting last night. Now, he calls me his AA pappy. I'm not his sponsor, but Gay and I, they don't know it, but we have spiritually adopted Ken and Burl. I guess they do know. And he means a lot to me. And my bell's been rung several times. I appreciate Doug being here this morning, and the speakers who have come. I think that I am more appreciative today than ever before of the admonition that if you find yourself in AA so long that you're no longer taking anything out, you better get a hold of your sponsor and take a good look at you. You may be in trouble. I've never been more appreciative of the fact than when Jerry reminded me again. And he did it so beautifully, so diplomatically, that only a fool, once informed, would be concerned any longer about giving up the pleasures of slow dying and yet living. I needed to hear this. Because I have just learned in the last 4 or 5 months that the steps promise physical recovery, not just the relief of the need of the drink, but a total physical recovery if you listen to the whole truth here, as well as spiritual and mental recovery. And Sandra, I've confessed before, I've not always been a devotee of Al-Anon. I have to confess, too, just in defense, that I've been in so long that I remember the ladies' auxiliaries. They spent more time roasting alcoholic husbands than they did helping people. And then some came along that got smart, and they said, "Hey, this program's for everybody." And I have a great, great love and admiration for the Al-Anon, and I just want you to know, honey, you stand for all of it. I got to be an alcoholic and get in the last lick, though. I want Bobby to stand up. Hadn't been for Bobby, you wouldn't be an Al-Anon. Stand up, Bobby. Just tease. Betty just finished the thought of theology for me yesterday. I've never heard it more beautifully expressed. When one in religious life, and it is my vocation because it is my calling, and claims probably the greatest majority of my life, but I learned something new yesterday. I've been looking for a way to express to people in a different way the experience of the cross in relationship to life. And she made me realize, look, you don't have to look for some other way. You know how it works. And Al, last night, oh, how I love and appreciate these people who came to AA before me. I hurt when I find them who are no longer active around, because not only are they losing so much, but I hurt because they've still got so much to give. And I need what they've got. And I thought again last night, how true. You reach the age in AA that you either become a bleeding deacon or an elder statesman. And he's an elder statesman, make no mistake about it. And with all the love, devotion, compassion, he's learned these 31 years or more, he's here sharing it. And I found a lesson in this. I'm not too many years away from that time. God keep me from being a bleeding deacon. And Doug, I can say one word and it says everything: humility. And this morning at the service of communion, no, it's not a part of the AA program. We don't even claim a sponsorship of it. We just put it here so that Protestants or others who feel the need for a moment of worship on a Sabbath morning can have it. Cindy and Hilda and Emerson, they preach my sermon. They sang that beautiful one day at a time and then came back and sung it for all of you. And the choir. I tell you, you know the guy that did the solo on How Great Thou Art? That's Hilda's husband. I want to just share in the next few moments something with you. For next week, God willing, 26 years, I have been saying to people, wherever I've been privileged to be, and it has been my privilege over the past years to have been all over this country and into Canada and other places, and I mean, we really went into Canada once, too. I've been reminded of it several times this week. I don't know why you people won't let a man forget one little mistake. If you didn't, any of you don't know about it, I thought I was going to Montreal to speak in 2 days. We went 2 days early so we could see Canada, and I found out I was 950 miles from where I was supposed to speak when we got there. And Gay was with me, and I drove 2 days across Canada without her speaking once. But I have been trying to say to people, not because there seems to be any dramatic effect, but because I still feel full of the need to say to people over and over again that I don't begin any day of my life without thanking God for AA. And I don't close a day without thanking God for AA. And I don't go into my pulpit and assume that holy place without thanking God for AA. Without you, I wouldn't have that privilege, and I know it. And I never go into my home and try to express my love to my wife, my children, that I don't thank God for. They're my possessions, and I would have lost them without you. And I've been thinking a great deal about this in the past weeks. I've had a lot of time to think. And I thought, well, I know the feeling of the need to say this day is everywhere, but why? And suddenly it occurred to me, well, that's what the big book said. How it was. What happened? what it's like now. Thomas Wolfe wrote something about never being able to go home. Now, I learned that this was true just a few years ago. Insofar as Thomas Wolfe was concerned, I grew up as a little boy in a cotton mill town called Newnan, Georgia. I was invited to speak in Atlanta. And Gay had planned to go with me, and the last moment she couldn't go, and I took my youngest son Mike with me. And we were in Atlanta a day early, and I wanted to go down to Newnan, and I wanted to show Mike Newnan. I wanted him to see all the places I talked about. And we rented a car, and we went down to Newnan. I wanted him to see the mill, and the mill village, and the mill pond, and the mill race, where I played as a boy and fished for minnows, laid in the grass. I wanted him to see the shipping platform and the warehouse where we used to hide in the cotton bales. We got a car and we rode out, and I had no difficulty finding the community. But I couldn't find the mill. I didn't know it was gone. I finally found the brick foundation of one building. I think it was the office building. The mill pond was dried up. There was no mill race. The village had rotted away. I came on down Jefferson Street in Newnan and tried to find my grandmother's home. And it was now a storage house for bottling company. I did find the house I was born in, but I hardly recognized it. And I drove back to Atlanta telling Michael, you know something? I'm sorry I built your hopes up to see something. And I guess the fellow that wrote You Can't Go Home was right. Mike said, no, I think just being with you was going home. And I've thought about this a great deal, and it's come to mean to me that Thomas Wolfe, unfortunately, never came to me. You can go home. And this weekend's been like homecoming. Beginning a day of life. What a bright and beautiful day. What a marvelous thing. Come down on the elevator, walk across the yard, people smile, grab your hand, hug your neck, kiss your cheek, and say hi. It's like home. And home talks about family. I wonder if you this weekend have felt like I have. What a marvelous family we belong to. This community that Charlie was talking about the other night. What a great family we belong to. And we acknowledge it over and over again. Maybe we just don't realize it. We stand together and as Fulton Ousler wrote, you have never heard the Lord's Prayer repeated until you hear it repeated in an AA meeting. I have had the privilege in 25 years of preaching in country crossroad churches and cathedrals. And I've heard groups from 20 to 3,000 repeat the Lord's Prayer, and nowhere do they pray it with the fervor and the intentness and the total connection with God as they do in AA. And we acknowledge the family because we stand up with the first word. We say, Our Father. Oh, what a wonderful thing to share this. That's family. That's family. I could have said this morning to you, as I did, I'm Tom Loren, I'm an alcoholic. I can go further and say, by the grace of God and the love and help of a lot of people this day, I am a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can find as much pride in being able to say this as anything I have ever been privileged to say about me. Now just let me tell you quickly what else I can say this morning, because I can say I am a member of AA. I could say this morning I am Gay's husband. I am Tom's, David, Danny's, and Mike's father. I am the father-in-law of four lovely ladies, Nancy, Susan, Charlotte, Carolyn. I am the grandfather of Seth, Matthew, Jennifer, Katie, Danny, Michelle, Joe, Eric, Thomas. I can say this morning that I am the pastor of Luray United Methodist Church. I can say this morning that I'm the pigeon of Julian Bosman. I got two sponsors. He's my alcoholic sponsor. Julie's my smoking on sponsor. I want to put one thing straight, too, right here. I haven't got anything against people smoking. Contrary to what you've been told, I just don't have anything. A lot of my friends are still crazy. But to be a member of this family, I think probably the most blessed fellowship known to you and me on the face of the earth. Now, make no mistake about it either. There are a great many people in the world who have a relationship to a fellowship that is as precious to them. And I'm not going to get started on this. I get stirred up when some alcoholic comes up to me and says, you know, Tom, we're God's chosen people. The hogwash. No, we've just been blessed as he'll bless anybody if you let him. What's chosen about us? If you're saying it because you feel such gratitude you can't find any other words to express it, fine. But hey, let's not get caught up in the ego and pride of being chosen. Let's tell you, this thing was willed to us in a strange and unique way. The heritage that is yours and mine to be a part of the fellowship of this family, that heritage was composed and written in the agonizing hours and the sweat and the tears and the suffering and the love of mothers and fathers and wives and husbands and children and friends. And the very bequest was written with the blood you and I sweated when we wanted to do something with our lives and couldn't make people understand we didn't want to be like this. We didn't know how to be anything else. Hey, this thing came the hard way. It didn't come easy. And being a family, so related one to another, it seems to me that every person who's been in this place and even the moments of fellowship have pointed up the responsibility that's yours and mine to keep it that kind of family. We just ought to be a little more careful. I become convinced of the words we utter. You know, people have just gotten habitual in their utterances that you pass somebody in the hallway here on the street and say, how are you? And keep going. I mean, you don't really care. If you did, you'd wait and find out. I shared with my congregation recently the secret of preachers. You know, preachers get called into all kind of civic and community affairs. And you go and you do the invocation or the benediction. Or very often they'll say, would you take, you know, they'll say, preacher, just 3 or 4 minutes of worship time. I used to get invited to pray at the opening of the town council. They don't ask me anymore. I told them they needed prayer worse than I did. But you go to these things because it's part of your duties, and you find some joy. And you get up after they've introduced you, and some nice lady at the garden club or some place has told what a privilege and pleasure it is to have you. And you get up and you say, I just can't tell you how glad I am to be here. What you mean is, When she called, if I could have thought of anything, I wouldn't be here. But you see, that's not the case with us here. We kept everybody from thinking of anything to keep us from here. See the difference? I never forget Dutch. We used to share so much. Dutch was a Methodist preacher too, for any of you who didn't know him, and we've heard his name a lot. And I've always believed that God just sort of brought Dutch my way, so that, well, he and I went in the ministry the back door. And you don't go to these elevated and very deeply spiritual ministers' conferences and get up and say, we are drunks and we want to talk. You have to have a friend to go off in the corner and talk with. Dutch used to talk about this using words wrong. He said, you know, I know we got to do it, Tom, but AA says honesty, and I feel so dishonest. I go in the hospital to make my calls, and I go up to an old sister, old fellow's room, and I go to the bed, and I say, Ma, you look good. And I come out, and Elsa say, how was it? I said, don't think he'll make it through the night. No, there's some places you have to be a little dishonest for the sake of people. Have you heard anybody stand here this weekend and engage in dishonesty for your sake and mine? Mm-mm. That's the kind of family we belong to. Thank God for this day of life. Oh, the days I got up. You didn't really get up, just part of you got up. And that was the part that had to get up. None of you would have got up if you could have helped it. And sit and look at yourself in the mirror and call yourself everything under the sun. And I've done this time and again in more seedy hotel rooms than you can remember, and drank a pint while I'm getting steady enough to shave. And a pitcher of ice water. And then look at yourself in the mirror after you've shaved and got everything. Then just before you open the door to come out in public and pray you don't fall over. And you walk through the lobby and you see somebody sitting there and you think, I wonder if he saw me last night. And you go out and you suddenly realize you don't know where the car is. But you don't want anybody to see that you don't know, and you sort of start walking on down the street like you know right where it is. And all the time you're looking at. That's the kind of days I got up with. And this morning, Gay and I got up and had our coffee together. She didn't have to say to me, where were you? I'm sorry you came home. I wouldn't have blamed them. No, we told each other we loved each other. We looked outdoors. And we came to communion. That's why I say thank God for AA. For this day of life. And then close a day of life. I liked what Al said, read about mistakes. And it's going to make me a little more honest. I'm going to tell you that I told Gay this morning that I admit that I made a mistake last month. Now, to close a day and the kind of days we used to close and not know it had ended. And the only consciousness that a day had passed would be this half consciousness of the next day, probably. With all the fears and the agonies of indecision. Well, have you ever been through it and come to on one day and not even know where you are? I did once. I've told it many times. I'd call Gay and promised I'd be home on Friday, and I suffered my first prolonged blackout. And I got home Friday the following week. And when I woke up, I didn't know where I was. I wasn't in the right hotel. I started out in the Hermitage in Nashville. This didn't look familiar. I'd been around AA a few times, and I remember hearing a guy tell how he found out where he was every morning, and I thought, well, this would work. I called downstairs and said, send me a local paper and a pitcher of ice water. You look at the local paper and find out where you are. If that guy in Nashville ever sent me a Louisville paper, I was in trouble, though. But these are the kind of days that ended. And I didn't like them. I didn't know how to change them. And I went up to my room last night, and I stepped off the elevator, and a man said, good night, Tom, I love you. Oh, what a wonderful way to end the day. That's why I can say, God, I thank you for this day. No, I don't have all good days. I don't think any of us do. But that book, big book, says that we're just not saints. We're just working towards spiritual growth. We don't really expect to reach any perfection. But we know as long as we're working to work in that direction, we can't go back. Why do I go in, get on my knees in my church and thank God for you? I just have had so much fun sharing God as I understand Him with people. So many times I've been asked, how'd you wind up in the ministry? I've had a couple of guys I've been talking to in AA at times to get a little word. They're afraid they were going to do this if I told them to do what I did. I came here for a very selfish purpose. I didn't come to AA from the ministry, for any of you who didn't know me. I've been in AA soon be 26 years. I've been around AA almost 30. In fact, Al apologized to me. He hadn't seen me in some time. He said, I had your name coupled with a real young boy that I didn't think was ever going to make it. I said, Al, that's been 30 years ago. Those days are not perfect in my activities, but seldom do they lack much being perfection in yours and your relationship to me and God's gift. I'm in the ministry because I had to be selfish, and I had to go where I could repay God day by day the debt that I will not live long enough to pay God and man. No, you see, I fouled up my life real good in AA. Oh, it was fouled up. There was an excuse before I got here. I tried to bring the excuse on into AA. In fact, the first time I went to AA, you told me that I had an illness, that I was sick. And you even convinced me, I convinced myself. This then made me not responsible. And I drove poor Gay Nellie to distraction by keeping on reminding her every time I got drunk that she shouldn't upset me. That's a terrible thing to do to an alcoholic. And that I couldn't help what I was doing because I was sick. And then there came the time when I went to Jack White and I said, I'm sick of me. I don't like what's happened. And I fooled with AA long enough, and I need help. He told me he knew it. A dear old man even said, I've watched you and I kind of hoped you'd come. Some of you in this room were touched by that man. I don't even want anybody to think he assumed pious robes of saintliness. Profane would be more apt. But he believed in God and the gifts of God, and he believed unless he could give them away, he couldn't keep them. We sat at his desk, and he said, you know, you need help. And I said, Jack, I've just done this thing wrong. I've come in today. I've said I wanted to stay sober, but I wasn't going to have anything to do. And I heard this weekend with the God business. Afraid of it. What I was trying to say is, so many of you have tried to say, and we're a little ashamed to say, we're not saying we don't believe in God. We're saying we're afraid we've forfeited our right. And I'm ashamed to admit it. And it hurts too bad to say it. Jack says, I know. Tom, do you pray? I said, Jack, I've done a lot of praying with words. Don't think I know how to pray. My sponsor said, well, I guess you don't, but you got to know some kind of prayer. I said, well, I'm sure of that. He said, it'll do. It'll do. Yes, he said, let me tell you about prayer. A man past 50 years of age in Keeley Institute, and believe it or not, and as I'm here, can bear me out, he had moved to Keeley to live. It's the only place he could stay sober long enough to conduct his business. And a kindly nurse told him one night, Mr. White, you've tried everything else. You've been here and been here and been here. Now you're living here. Why don't you pray? He said to her, I don't know how to pray. She said, you got to know some kind of prayer. He said, well, I remember one when I was a child. Now I'll lay me down to sleep. She said, that might do. And that man told me that she left, and he said, I'm going to tell you something. I got out and prayed. And I prayed, now I lay me down to sleep. And he said, I didn't even pray it right, but I'm glad I didn't, because what I prayed had more meaning for the moment. He said, I prayed if I should wake before I die. Now you just think about this too. How many times have you been afraid you would wake up before you died? And he said, Tommy, it worked for me. I haven't had a drink since. Little by little, this man made me realize that I had to be where God would be part of my life. I wasn't going to make it. I didn't come to this vocation for you. I came here for me. That I've had the privilege of sharing with some people has just been some of the dressing. I once sat in a committee of preordination examination, and one of our old bishops walked in, and when a bishop in our church comes in, you invite him to sit in any committee. He sounded like that fellow that had the 700-pound gorilla, and somebody said, where does he sleep? He said, anywhere he wants to. And asked the bishop if he'd like to question the applicants. He said, yeah, I'd like to ask Brother Lovern about his call to the ministry. And I had to say, Bishop, I don't know anything about a call to the ministry. I could almost see the wheels going around his head. I know he's thinking our church needs preachers, but I don't think this bad. Why are you here then? I said, you got a few minutes? And I told him a capsule version of why I was here. You could tell the story. I said, I'm here because God beat me here. He said, you got a call. That's a call, I got it. I'm here because I got to be close to God. I had a wife and three children when this decision was made, and I had to go back to school. I was a trained engineer, and I hadn't had much that got me ready for the ministry. I went back to Randolph Macon College, and I talked to the president of the school, and I said, I'm going to come back to school. I'd like to come in at mid-year. I've got to pick up some courses before I can do seminary work. And he said, I understood you were coming. Well, it's a Methodist school. That wasn't strange. I had already begun getting caught up in the system. And then he said, I had visitors. There were a couple of men came by, and he had already asked me if I had any money. I said, no, I don't have any money. I can remember him. He said, I just don't understand why God never calls a rich man to the ministry. I said, no, I don't have any money. And he said, I believe you've got a family. I said, yeah, a wife and three children. He said, how do you propose to go to school? I said, I don't know. I'm just going to start and see. I got a lot of friends that have taught me this is what you do. He smiled. He said, well, I had a couple of visitors. They know you. And they told me you were coming. And they said as long as you and your family were here studying for the ministry, you would have everything you needed. Who are they? Oh, he said, that was part of the bargain. You're not to know. I was serving my first full-time appointment in the ministry when I was called to Richmond to participate in the funeral of Turner Bethel, one of my early day AAs. As we stood together by his remains, his sister said to me, Turner found such joy in being a little part of your ministry, number one. I buried Jack White, and friends said, Tom, do you know how much Jack enjoyed and loved being a part of your ministry, number two? That's why when I go in the pulpit of the church, I have to kneel and thank God for AA and all of you. You see, without you, wouldn't have the privilege. When I go into my home, and I can sit in the early morning hours with Gay as we did this morning for a few minutes, when we can spend an evening together in our parsonage at home, which isn't that often, when we can ride along together coming here, and I can just look over at this woman, and you know what I call it, it's got to be, she's God's lend lease to me. I like with my children, I just sort of fill up. And I just have to thank God for AA and for all of you. You see, Gay found you before I did. And she found from you there was hope for me. And if there was hope for me, even that hope that was talked about here this weekend, there was hope for her. Then there was hope for us. She found the family of AA before I knew it was here. And she prayed. And she begged. And she guided. And she stayed. Only one time. She was with child. I was in New Orleans. I was not dependable. And on the advice of doctor and minister, she left and left me there. Our family was restored. I look at this woman and I have to thank God for AA and all of you. Every one of us somewhere had some kind of anchor as thin as the line may have stretched. That anchor might not have been the one that brought us to this fellowship. But that anchor held on some kind of way to keep us totally from drifting away until we got here. Might have been somebody you didn't know, but it was somebody. I don't care who we were or where we came from. If you go back all the way in your life, there was somebody that cared enough about you to say at least, oh God, do something for him or her. That was the anchor. This marvelous family. To be able to stand and to pray, Our Father. Can you think of anything today, AA or Al-Anon, that means more to you than this? I can't. One of these days, I want to take a Sunday morning and stand here and just try to tell you one incident after another that's happened in this place. You never know what the theme is going to be. It starts out on Friday and somehow something gets injected and involved and it never ends. It flows right on through. I remember once a man stood here on Friday night and he was a man who his first trip here had gotten so upset because a man read the 23rd Psalm. That he went home and wrote me the nastiest letter I ever got from anybody. But on the night I'm speaking of, he spoke here. And he asked that same man to come read the psalm. And on the next day, another man got to speaking of the shepherd with the sheep on his shoulders. Three meetings and three people made reference to the shepherd. Now, if you don't believe me, ask some of the people here. Sunday morning, there were sheep on this front lawn, and to this day, we don't know where they came. It's the truth. It's the truth. Somebody said, well, it got off a stock truck. Never defined stock truck. I don't know where they came from. It boggles my mind. I'm going to leave it where it is. I prefer to... Our Father, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. We're people who could say, a little of thy kingdom has come in our hearts. Thy will be done. Oh, we've read it time and time again in the steps. On earth as it is in heaven. Isn't that what we're asking for when we read the steps? Isn't that what we commit our will and our lives to the care of God for? That the holiest of His will be done in us. God tells me, he said, man, ain't no religion in AA. He's been going the same places I've been going. Give us one day, this day, our daily bread. I stand in my church, and I have a fine church, and I love every member of that church. And they're doing it their own way, the best I guess they know how. And probably it's an indictment of me that I don't lead better. But I hear them pray the Lord's Prayer. You know how they pray it. Unfortunately, we pray it a lot of time. We're back to those words that we utter. Give me this day my daily bread. Now, if you think we don't pray that, listen. Give me now. That's what made us drunks. No. Just one day. We prayed it in the steps. We pray it in the prayer. Just give me a day. Just give me a day. Let me not be led into temptation. We pray almost every one of us every morning of our life. God help me. The only thing that could tempt my life today is a drink. If we can keep this out, with your help I can handle the living problem. AA has already taught you and me we don't have a drinking problem anymore. We got a living problem. We read it in the steps. We pray it in the prayer. The family prayer. And why shouldn't we then pray to our Father a thanksgiving litany of glory and power and allness? He's everything we got. What a family. Oh God, I'm glad I belong to it. I never begin a day of my life that I don't thank God for AA. I'd have long since having days hadn't been for you. I don't end the day of my life that I don't spend a moment thanking God for AA and all of you. Without you, they would have ceased to be. Don't say it for dramatics. I know it's true. I know it's more true today, and I'm going to inject another thought here in closing. And I certainly don't say it for any dramatic effect at all. It's just trying to share truth with you. I stood here 6 months ago, and I'll be honest with you. People say, how do you feel? You say, I feel fine. You get tired. I wasn't sure I'd be here. Now that's the God's truth. I'm so happy to be here, I don't know what to do. I'm here because my family is the product of AA. When Daddy got sick enough, physically, like you came with the disease to help me, they came and took things over in my household. My four sons came together. They told their mother and me that Dad is sick and he's going to die, and we're not going to sit by and let it happen. You're going to close this house and you're going with us. We went 250 miles from home, and I spent that month in the hospital and at a doctor's. Now, they couldn't have done this if they hadn't learned too from this family. And so I can never go into my home and see that wife and those children without thanking God for Ray and all of you. They're the most precious possessions I have, and without you, I would have lost them. And I say to you once again that if it means anything to any one of you at the 11 o'clock hour on the Sabbath day, unless I'm in this place or one or two other places, at 11 o'clock on Sundays, I go into the pulpit of my church, I stop and kneel. Not to fulfill any creedal or doctrinal requirements at all. It has nothing to do with our order of worship. It's my moment to stop and say, God, I want to thank you for AAs. I want you to bless them across the face of the earth. They're my family. And without them, I couldn't be here. God bless you.